You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. He does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your once-a-week edition right now, as we have some scheduling conflicts, some things coming up this weekend, some things preventing us from going earlier in the week. But we got a lot to talk about. We got a South Dakota victory, a 49-14 victory for your Bison over South Dakota, a couple of NDSU basketball games. And then we have to preview this Illinois State game coming up this weekend, the final game of the regular season. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are things for you today?
Going well. As you mentioned, some weekend things. I get to be the best man at a wedding for the first time this weekend. I'm very excited about it. My very best friend in the world is getting married to a very cool person, and we're all pumped. And I'm excited to be in the great state of Wisconsin very shortly.
So we can make sure that Ross can continue his best man duties. We're recording here on Wednesday, and so let's get into it, Ross, with the first part of this podcast in terms of the news part. A lot of players of the week to talk about. Mr. Stick, Mr. Valson, Mr. Allison, all gain recognition from the conference in that 49-14 victory. Do you agree with each one of those decisions?
Yeah, I thought they were all excellent, with the exception of maybe the point that I'm not even – convinced Easton Stick was NDSU's player of the game. When you look at the yards per carry numbers from one Ty Brooks, but if you concede that Easton Stick and he have like 27 yards per attempt,
yeah, that was crazy. By the way, 11 of 12 for 307. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Well, right. So if you get to the point where you kind of become okay with Ty Brooks not being NDSU's offensive player of the game, and you just look at the type of numbers that the Bison put up on that side of the ball, you get to a point where you're okay then with North Dakota State having having the offensive player of the game, because just how good their offense was. I mean, it was an absolute clinic that was put on that side of the ball. As far as defender, Jalen Allison stood out. I mean, he was very good in support. They were a team that was trying to spread you out, trying to run the ball with their quarterback, trying to do a lot of things that ultimately were not all that successful, because it's been kind of bandied about, and it's a real-life statistic. I mean, this was South Dakota's lowest point total in 2 years, 14 points. The yardage totals maybe don't look like Bison defense, but at the end of the day, it's about what you put up on the scoreboard, and Jalen Allison was excellent. Really, the only grab he gave up was a highlight-level play that, you know, may or may not have even been a completion. It was reviewed. It got changed to a completion. If you go by the Dez Bryant version of what's a completion, it wasn't a completion. But it's not a big deal one way or the other. The point is that he was exceptional. And then Tanner Bolson, I thought, was great. I thought the entire interior of the offensive line really played their best football, at least in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I was impressed with Mesner. I was impressed with Bolson. Cooner, you know, got in a little bit of an injury situation, but I thought Luke Bacon, frankly, came in and played excellently in his stead. So I was pretty pleased with all of the award winners, and had absolutely no problem with them. It was such a dominating performance, though, that, you know, you could have honored a number of different Bison with, you know, the honors that were bestowed upon Stick, Allison, and Volson. It's just too bad they couldn't get a freshman or a transfer to play really well and sweep the weekly awards.
All right, let's switch to a little bit of basketball talk here. You're looking at some of the first couple of games that have been played out west. And the first thing that'll draw your eye is, Ross alluded to last week, I believe, he thought that Rocket Cruiser was going to play right away. He has. But one name I've noticed that hasn't been able to find game action yet is Tyree Edie. Do you still believe that he's probably not going to redshirt, or what is your opinion there?
Yeah, for my conversations, I guess, with people around the program, I would still anticipate Edie to be a part of the playing group, the guys that get into the games. I think Meininger is going to be the only one that redshirts. I know for a fact that Edie was on the trip, and that just tells you all you need to know. I believe he's working with a ankle situation right now, and once he gets through that, I firmly believe that he's going to be a part of what they're doing, you know, kind of on a full-time basis, at least for the rest of the season. So, I think you're going to see some Edie.
All right, so let's talk about the two basketball games to start the season here. The first one being on Saturday against UC Santa Barbara, an 85-66 road loss for the Bison. They just aren't able to shoot it well enough from the field, only 40% from the field, 30% from beyond the arc. And you look on the other side of things, Santa Barbara, they're able to shoot it over 50% from the field, over 54% from three, Ross. And when you look at the first game of the season for NDSU, what were your takeaways?
They just played poorly, and I don't think there's any question about it. There were no excuses made. It was poor defense. They did not play the way that they are capable of playing, and there's really no way around it. And it led up to a game, frankly, against USC that, you know, I guess you would say had low expectations.
And so when you look at this game against USC that took place on Monday night, the Bison were in it for most of the game. Unfortunately, they fall late, 75-65 out there in Southern California. When you look at some of the big stats from this game, again, NDSU struggles to shoot it from behind the arc, 10 of 29 from three. And just they couldn't really get it going, especially in the second half. But when you look at that game, I know we have to talk about it here a little bit. I think Cameron Hunter is going to be a pretty good player. What do you think?
I agree. I've talked to a few people around the program really say that Cam Hunter has taken a significant step from where he was a year ago to where he is now. And the fact that NDSU is going to get 4 years of him, I think, is a really, really big deal. Man, I think that game against USC is really going to, I think, improve people's opinions of where this program could possibly go this year. I think getting beat by a Santa Barbara team that struggled so much last season really lent a lot of credence to the fact that or the idea, you know, that NDSU was in a bunch of trouble. With the early exit last year's Summit League tournament, with the defection of Kai Cabellis, with the, graduation of probably, you know, the most popular player ever in the history of North Dakota State hoops, there's a lot of reason to be negative, you know, for Smart fans and for, you know, kind of your internet fans, there was plenty of reason to be down on the program, and I think you saw a team that really had a chance to beat USC and probably should have won that game. And that's in USC's place. We're talking about a top 10 team in the country. The idea that this year's team could be as good or better than last year's team, I think you would have gotten laughed at. But boy, you watched last year's squad play against high majors. They certainly weren't at the level that NDSU played at last night. So it's going to be something to watch. There's no question about it. I think this team's best basketball absolutely is going to come in January and February as they begin to understand how all of the new pieces fit, how Cameron Hunter fits, how Rocky Cruiser fits, how Tyree Edie fits, how Dengu being 100% no matter what has to be a part of things, how that's going to work out. They'll figure out 8, maybe 9, and I think this is going to be a year where they stick to 8 or 9 and not crank down to the Dave 7 at the end of the year.
You mentioned the player with probably the highest ceiling on this squad, Dengu. You look at his first two games, 11-3 versus Santa Barbara. And then on Monday night, he's able to put up in 15 minutes. He did fall out of the game, 6-3. What have you seen from Dengu through his first two games compared to what you saw from him all of last season?
Yeah, just an aggression that I didn't see. Some defense that I didn't see last year, maybe. I don't know. I just was more impressed with him. I've got a few issues with the officiating from last night. I thought it was pretty pro-USC. I really didn't like specifically the two calls that fouled out Jacobson and Gu. I thought both calls were poor, and I felt like because of their size difference in the positive, that I really felt the bigs for USC were given some liberties. But Gu held his own, and frankly, you know, probably should have been even a bigger part of that game had he not fouled out. The Bison had to go pretty small to close, and that small lineup kind of fell to pieces. In fact, the team kind of fell to pieces in the last 2 minutes of both games. I think in the, you know, other 36 minutes that weren't the last two of each half, golly, NDSU had to be plus 16.
And the final thing I really want to ask you about here is Cameron Hunter. We've already talked about him a little bit, but he hasn't been starting yet, but he has been playing a lot of minutes. He's played 20-plus minutes in both of the first two games, 28 minutes against Santa Barbara, putting up 11-2. And then in the USC game, kind of a coming-out party for him, 4 or 5 from behind the arc, 24 points in all. So when you look at the starting lineup for NDSU right now, you have Paul being the primary ball handler, Jared Samuelson out on the wing being your primary shooter, considering every shot that Jared Samuelson has taken through two games, a very small sample size in just two games, has been a three-pointer. And you also have Tyson Ward, A.J. Jacobson, and Dylan Miller. Do you think that the staff should be getting any thought to really sliding in Cameron Hunter to the one, putting Paul Miller to the kind of the off guard? But I would just imagine that both guys are still going to handle the ball out. So what do you think about inserting Cameron Hunter into that starting lineup potentially?
It's something I would do. You know, I would probably find a place for Dengu to play, but I'm not sure that you're in a position now where you can bench a Tyson Ward just because of the length and athleticism and kind of exceptional play that he really does provide. Would you go Cameron, Paul, Deng, AJ, and Dylan, then you're bringing Dengu off the bench, or do you, you know, maybe not play, you know, maybe not start Tyson, and then you're playing Tyson off the bench, you're playing AJ at the three. There are a number of different options, but I would probably have Jared Samuelson coming off the bench as more of a three-point specialist as opposed to your starting wing guy. I think, you know, his inability to get to the basket and his inability to defend maybe in a way that they want to limits the team, I think. And there's certainly a reason that Jared Samuelson was given a scholarship. There are certainly minutes for a guy like Jared Samuelson within this program, but probably not as your starting two guard.
All right, let's switch over to some football talk and get into this 49-14 victory from over the weekend. North Dakota State stomps on the Coyotes. You look at that 49-14 victory, and the first thing that's probably going to stand out to you, Ross, is the 647 yards of total offense on the day, 340 of it on the ground, 307 of it through the air. Just one of probably, I'm guessing, the best offensive performance of the season in your mind? Or what were your thoughts on the offense from Saturday?
Yeah, I don't think it's any type of elite analysis there. But, yeah, I mean, I think this was probably their best run on the offensive side of the ball for 60 minutes. I don't, you know, gal. Yeah, I just think that it was their best offense. I think this entire performance that they put together was impressive, really, from top to bottom. Offensive line was excellent. The backs played well. The quarterback was just about flawless. And then you know, the pass catchers made the plays that they were asked to make. And, boy, it wasn't a lot of plays, you know. I mean, this was not something that they were asked to do a ton because NDSU was pretty much running the ball, and they were doing it for 350 or so yards. I was super impressed. Thought that, 650 yards. No, USD's not, you know, a lot of defense. I don't even think USD is on the same level as this Illinois State team that they'll play this weekend. But 647 yards is 647 yards, and that's against a team, you know, that had basically been picked to be NDSU's biggest competition in the league through the first 4 weeks. So it's something you definitely have to pay attention to, and you have to be pretty pleased with when you're talking about 650 yards of offense.
I know another thing you're very pleased with is the offensive line's performance when you look at that on the day. Again, they allow Easton Stick 12 dropbacks, no sacks in the day. Then they're able to open a lot of holes for these NDSU running backs, 7.4 yards per carry, over 350 yards on the ground, 6 rushing touchdowns. What did you think of the offensive line's performance against this Coyote defense?
Well, we touched on it a little bit already. You know, I really liked what I saw from lots of guys. I liked what I saw from Folsom. I liked what I saw from Messner. I need to go probably back and watch it again to really evaluate the tackles, because the tackles just weren't asked to do that much. There wasn't a lot of pass protecting, and the outside runs were mostly pulls, so the guards are doing the primary blocking at the point of attack anyway, and Ty Brooks is basically just leaving a dust trail in his wake. So, but yeah, I mean, like you said, I thought the offensive line played well for the first time in a while.
All right, so let's get into some of these skill position guys for NDSU, starting with Ty Brooks, 9 for 152 and 3, almost 17 yards a carry on the day for Ty Brooks. I know you've been another guy on his bandwagon. I think it's getting a little bit more crowded on there after his performance on Saturday.
Yeah, we're not really alone anymore. That's for sure.
No. Nope.
But that doesn't mean we were wrong. And, you know, that's exciting, I guess, when you notice things, in limited reps, and then the reps become not so darn limited. And then everybody else noticed what you've been pointing out. And yeah, he's exceptional. I think they might, with his new role, maybe miss his contributions on teams a little bit, just because, he might be to a point now in the offense where they really feel like they can't. Waste isn't the right word, but they might feel like they can't use him on specials. That's a reasonable kind of angle to take at that, or a reasonable opinion to have, is that he cannot be the kick returner because he's too valuable to what they do on offense. But man, he has been good.
And then Easton Stick, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. He was, I believe, the offensive player of the week for the Missouri Valley. And you look at his day, 11 of 12, 307 in a touch. And then he's also got 7 for 39 on the ground in a touch. I want to ask you more specifically about the passing game. I'm sure folks are well aware that coming into this game, Easton Stick had thrown multiple interceptions in 3 straight games. And then he goes out, and as you mentioned, he 307 by 11, he's 20-plus yards in attempt on the day. What went well for Easton Stick this week compared to what we've seen in recent weeks?
A lot of stuff went well for Easton Stick. I think, you know, he's a guy that I felt like was hurt. I had noticed a little bit of limp between plays. The box score certainly would have you suggest that there was something up. I noticed what I felt like maybe could have been the injury mechanism, and shared that in a clip on Twitter. When you see stuff like that, you pay attention to when it ends, and I didn't see a lot of limping around between plays in this game against USD. Does that mean I was right? No, it doesn't mean that he was hurt. The staff always maintained that there was nothing physically, you know, wrong with him. But at the same time, it doesn't mean I was wrong either. And I felt like his performance as a whole was better and looked healthier all at the same time, which, whether I'm right or wrong, is super irrelevant. What's important and what I think is key here is just how well he played, and that if truly he has overcome something that was going on in his lower body, he can go back to the Easton Stick that looked like a conference player of the year candidate.
All right, let's talk a little bit of the defense. You look at their performance, only 14 points given up, but they did give up 419 total yards on the day. So how would you assess the defense's play against the Fighting Chris Stravlers of South Dakota?
Yeah, and I think you have to start right there. You know, I think you have to go in with a grain of salt and realize that you're dealing with the best offensive threat in the FCS, and that you probably weren't going to hold South Dakota to 250 yards as a team or hold them to 6 points. You have to take this success on the scoreboard, which is, of course, just the 14 points the 14 points against, and definitely take that as a victory and just work on everything else as far as, ideally you would give up fewer yards. There's no question about that. But you have to be happy about only giving up 2 touchdowns.
All right, so let's get your thoughts on a few different buys and defenders. Starting with Marquise Bridges, you look at his day. Again, stats don't tell the whole story for a secondary player. 2 tackles, 1 pass broken up. What were your thoughts on Mr. Bridges' performance?
I thought it was his best game in a Bison uniform. I thought he looked like he belonged. Kleiman said kind of the same thing when we spoke on Monday, that he's blending in. And what that means is that when he's getting reps in practice, nobody's worried about what he's doing on the defensive staff. He's doing what he is supposed to do within the framework of the defense. And when you've got a guy who's just a sophomore and who used to play a wide receiver for you, out at the cornerback spot, you need to get him ready to play. And the number one thing getting him ready to play is not physical, it's mental. NDSU's defensive secondary is very difficult. You can see that anytime they bring in a junior college guy. Quentin McCoy didn't get to play until he was a senior, and that was really only in the case of injury. Even a guy like Darren Kelly now, who you and I both thought was going to be a high level, really high level recruit for these guys. He's a senior now and doesn't look to be a factor on the defense, and just is going to end up likely being an excellent special teamer, and that's fine, but it's just so hard to get ready to go as a defensive back in this system. And boy, you have to be impressed with Marquise Bridges.
All right, let's talk about another guy I know that you come on to of late, and that's Derek Tuska. He's got 3 sacks now in his last 4 games. We've been looking for that defensive end position to generate some pressure without Menard, and Tuska gets another sack on Saturday.
Yeah, Derek, I really truly believe he and Greg have a chance to be as good as North Dakota State's been on the pass rush from both sides since Jerick and Emmanuel worked together. No disrespect intended whatsoever to Brad Ambrosius, but he's just not the kind of pass rusher I think that Derek Tuska has proven to be. And because of that, you get a chance to really on third down, utilize Tuska and Menard together, with Stanley Jones being an excellent third option as well. I think Bison fans have to be just incredibly excited about the future of the defensive end position, because you've got guys, even now coming down the pipe, that have a ton of talent too. Everybody's very high on Wagey and Sunt, and McCormick obviously is getting reps now. But even looking further into the future with Tony Pierce Jr. and Bart Ogbu, this is a loaded group now, and it's going to continue to be a loaded group in the future.
Final guy I want to ask you about before we get into Illinois State is James Hendricks. I think he is the backup at every position on the team. I know that Coach Kleiman talked about in the press conference he was getting work in with the linebackers in the secondary and in the quarterback room. That's about as versatile as you're going to find a player at the collegiate level.
Unbelievable. I mean, exactly what Kleiman said is probably true. I cannot possibly imagine another Division I athlete. It might go on at a D3 school, but I cannot imagine another Division I athlete meeting with the linebackers at 205 pounds, getting work in with the linebackers, and then going to the DB's meeting, getting work in at safety, getting work in at nickel. And then, oh, by the way, our backup QB got hurt, and we don't really have a ton of faith in our freshmen, so you're going to be our second-team quarterback. Why don't you go spin it around with Coach Hedberg? It's just wild, and the phrase Kleiman kept using was Bison Pride, a guy that they really are impressed with, and that, frankly, the seniors just have such an appreciation for what he's done because his versatility is allowing them to overcome kind of an insane number of season-ending injuries and, you know, really, frankly, give them a shot at a national championship that if James Hendricks wasn't ready to go, they might not be, you know, a one-loss team at this point.
All right, let's get into this Illinois State game this week. In the final regular season game for the Bison, they're going to be heading down to Illinois State to take on a 6-4 Redbirds squad. You look at this Redbirds team, it's been a very hot and cold season for them. They were able to start off the season 4-0, then they drop two, and then they win two important games for them against South Dakota and Youngstown State. But in their last two, they've lost to Western Illinois, and then they lost to South Dakota State in Brookings in overtime last week. So a 6-4 team in the Redbirds, and we really don't know who's going to be the quarterback because it's been a two-quarterback system, or at least was last week, and even a one-quarterback. Jake Colby had been the primary quarterback throughout the entire season for the Redbirds, and then freshman Malachi Broadnax drew the start last week. So your guess is as good as mine on who is the potential starter for NDSU going against this Illinois State team.
I would pay attention to Broadnax just because Jake Colby is the exact kind of QB you don't want to use against North Dakota State. Illinois State already runs a traditional offensive set, like in NDSU, like in Iowa. Teams that, you know, or styles that just don't work well against the Bison defense. You have to spread NDSU out. You have to have a quarterback that is a threat to run the ball, but is competent passing the ball. And that is something I'm not sure Illinois State can accomplish. I know you can't do it at Colby. You saw what NDSU just did to Sean McGuire, you know, as kind of your more statuesque quarterback. But even then, you know, I don't know if Broadnax is the answer either, just completing 50% of his passes. You're going to get in a situation where NDSU is going to make you prove you can throw the football. And that might very well be what you see out of Broadnax.
When you look at this offense as a whole, they are a pretty traditional style of offense. Running back to know is James Robinson. He's been their main ball carrier throughout the entire season. He went for 15 for 83 and 2 touchdowns last week against South Dakota State. And then two receivers to know are Christian Gibbs and Spencer Schnell. So what do you think of the rest of these Redbird skill position players when you look at them outside of the quarterback?
Not that impressive of a group, frankly. You know, they don't have Anthony Warham anymore, I don't believe. They're missing, you know, that game breaker like they had when they had Marshawn Coppridge. It's just a good, not great offense that's pretty much being carried by what I think is one of the better defenses in all of FCS football, especially just from a talent standpoint up front. I think where they really struggle as a group is all along the offense, really. I just don't think that they are a really high-level football team on that side of the ball.
All right, so let's talk about some of those guys in the defensive side of the ball. You look at what Illinois State was able to do last week. They only allowed a very potent South Dakota State team to score 27 points on the day, and you look at their defense as a whole, they have 74 tackles for loss through 10 games. They have 29 sacks. A couple of guys that will probably catch your eye, Tyree Horton, Adam Conley, Dalton Keene. This is a very, very talented defense, Ross.
They're very talented, yes, absolutely. I think it's impressive what Spack's been able to build there. He caught a lot of flack after Illinois State went to the FCS National Championship because that particular team was so built on the back of FBS transfers, and they thought that, you know, it was easy to sort of paint Spack as a bit of a gun for hire type of guy. But, you know, they've been exceptional. You even look at a guy like Alec Kukur, who's a senior safety, which really makes me feel old because I remember covering his recruitment. That's a guy that NDSU lost straight up. The Bison went head-to-head with Coach Spack, and Kukur chose to play ball in Normal, and that's kind of a little bit more of this team's brand of football as program guys as opposed to how super transfer heavy Spack has been in the past. But yeah, they're talented up front, that's for sure. And they're deep in the secondary as well.
All right, so let's talk about this Valley conference championship potential. NDSU is on the top at 6-1. South Dakota State, Northern Iowa, the only two others with a chance of catching NDSU, only if a loss occurs. So when you look at this, I mean, how difficult did it, I mean, try to put it in perspective for folks, how difficult is it to win the outright Missouri Valley football championship?
It's so tough because, you know, generally someone else, whether it's an expected type of team or not, will stumble through with only one loss, you know, and then you got to go undefeated to win the league. This year it's a little bit simpler in the sense that all NDSU has to do to win the league outright is just continue to, you know, maintain their status as a one-loss Valley team, and NDSU hasn't lost two conference games in the same season, you know, in a while. But you just struggle with getting through the conference that way. Most of the time they've had to go undefeated to win the league, and like I said, it's just something that has been so tough for them to do. Even when they've had national championship level teams, it's still been incredibly difficult for NDSU to be outright Valley champs.
And so if you look at, you know, how things we see it are likely going to play out this weekend with a NDSU victory over Illinois State, they're going to win the Valley outright, and you'd have to think they'd probably be a top two seed again. The two teams ahead of them to watch there are Jacksonville State, Central Arkansas. But with how tough it is, as you just explained, to win the Missouri Valley outright, you'd think that the committee of sorts would have to get this right and put NDSU as a two seed, right?
You would hope. So much of what's gone on in the polling, and this is going to sound kind of arrogant, but it is jealousy. You've seen for years now how quickly the coaches poll and the, you know, frankly, the football ops guys and the interns that fill out those polls for their coaches who probably don't care at all and are busy worrying about other stuff. But when NDSU loses, they take huge hits in those types of polls. The media are generally a little bit kinder, but Even then, there's Bison fatigue, and that's really, I think, the biggest key to this polling is Bison fatigue. You know, people are sick of the story. They want it to kind of be over, and you look at NDSU's resume, the teams that they've beaten, how highly ranked those teams remain, how much better the Valley is year in and year out. This year's no different in the non-conference competition and the postseason competition. We don't obviously know the results of the postseason competition yet, but I mean, I can pretty much tell you the Valley's going to be excellent yet again. All you really have to look for there is, you know, what happened with Youngstown State last year. You take the Bison out of the championship, and the third or fourth best team in the conference in Youngstown goes all the way to the ship. So you really just have to hope that there is a little bit of sensibility and the understanding that a one-loss Valley champion absolutely needs one of the top two seeds in the FCS. I don't care if it's North Dakota State. In any year, the Valley champion, if they're a one-loss undisputed champion, should be a one or a two seed.
All right, so let's preview this game this weekend in terms of prediction and get out of here, Ross. You look at the lines from Vegas, the latest I've seen here is North Dakota State is an 11.5-point road favorite heading on down to Illinois State this weekend. What do you think of that line, and what is your official Bison Report prediction as we look at the final regular season game for the Bison?
I just recorded my spot on Bison 1660, and I believe I said 27-13. Two-touchdown victory for NDSU. I hedged last week like an idiot, and you know, after weeks of being pretty darn accurate, hitting these wide spreads, I got scared by the Dakota Marker loss and predicted a close game that was absolutely not close. So I'm just going to go right back to trusting my gut. And my gut says I don't really see Illinois State being able to score a ton. I think Brodnack's probably one-dimensional as a runner. Colby's one-dimensional as a, well, frankly, not even that successful passer. I just don't see them scoring a lot of points. And the way that Messingham has this entire, has this entire team on offense playing so well, I just can't see them being held to less than 27 points. I think that four-touchdown area is probably more likely than it is not.
Sounds good to me. So if folks want to watch that game this weekend, reminder, the game is at noon, and it is down there at Illinois State. So if you want to help support us in what we do, you can head on over to thebisonreport.com. I just posted this week's Know Your Enemy series with Illinois State beat writer Michael Mara. He looks at the Redbird squad, gives his prediction. It's always fun to see opposing beat writers try to think that games are going to stay close against the Bison, and then more times than not, they're usually far off. And then Ross is going to have his preview up in the next few days. And then we're trying to get some recruiting stuff out, but folks have to answer their phone, their text messages, their DMs, their smoke signals, and their carrier pigeons before we can do that. So hopefully we can get some responses back. So we want to thank you guys for listening once again. If you want to help us out even more, you can rate and subscribe on your podcasting app, whether that's the Apple podcast app, whether that's your Stitcher app, whatever podcasting form you found us at, please rate and review us and then subscribe as well. So we'll be back next week to talk about hopefully a Missouri Valley Conference championship. For Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.